Committee to order for March 20th. And before we start today's agenda, members, I'd like to make one clarification to our actions here on Senate File 2321. During last week's debate on the bill, and that is the second omnibus transportation bill, Senator Dibble offered an amendment that would have deleted Section 33 of the bill. A roll call was asked for. And we got the vote totals wrong on that and just wanted to clarify that the actual roll call on that, rather than being 5 yes and 8 no, was actually 4 yes and 9 no, just so that the record indicates that that we didn't quite get that right. So appreciate your indulgence on that, and we'll get started with our agenda on Senate File 2261, Senator Rust. At this point, we don't have a quorum, but once we have a quorum, we'll announce that we can take action on these bills. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2261 is a bill brought to you on behalf of the City of Golden Valley. Brief background, and then I'll turn it over to the mayor of Golden Valley to give you more details about what we believe is a fair settlement of the issues. But there was a time a couple of years ago when an irregularity was discovered in the deputy registrar's office in the city hall of Golden Valley. The irregularity led to a suspicion of fraud by an employee, and the site was closed down, and the Department of Public Safety, Department of Transportation were notified of that irregularity and the suspicion of fraud. Since that time, the site has remained closed down, and a lot of data has been gathered about how the fraud was able to be perpetrated, and there are both criminal and civil actions going forward. The City of Golden Valley maintains that there are now some good practices in place that should lead to the reopening of the deputy registrar's office in the city of Golden Valley. It was a very popular one, and people in my communities depended upon it and used it. And so this bill would direct the Department of Public Safety, Transportation under certain circumstances, to allow that deputy registrar's office to be reopened. We have been in discussion with DPS and transportation, had hoped that the issues could be resolved without legislation. Has not yet reached that point, and so we thought that the discussion should then be brought to the legislature. I have with me the mayor of Golden Valley, Mr. Shep Harris, if we could hear from him.
Certainly. Welcome, Mr. Mayor, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Shep Harris. I'm the mayor of Golden Valley, and I appreciate Senator Rest as well as Chairman Gimsey for introducing this legislation, as this is Golden Valley's highest legislative priority for the session. For those who don't know much about Golden Valley, it is, I'm a little biased, of course, but it's one of the best places, I think, to live, work, and visit in the entire state. And, of course, I invite you to come on over sometime after session and visit with me. It's a beautiful suburban community outside of Minneapolis with about 20,000 residents. And it swells to more than 30,000 on a daily basis due to the presence of small business and major corporations like Honeywell, General Mills, tenant companies, Mortenson Construction, and so on. And because of the community size and businesses and visitors to the city on a daily basis, many have come to realize on our motor vehicle license office for more than 25 years. Our residents have high expectations and believe that they receive quality service from the city. Our residents believe that the city is well-run and well-managed. In fact, we can point to a bond rating status of AAA, and also evidence of that is more than a decade of awards from government financial trade associations. As you can see from the timeline handout, hopefully, that you have there, we've been, our DMV has been closed almost a year now, and it did come to a shock to the members, to the community, to the residents, to business members who utilized the office last year when we learned of the criminal activity occurring in the DMV. Our city quickly responded and has appropriately and completely communicated and cooperated with the state auditor, the Department of Public Safety, and local law enforcement authorities. I want to assure you that this illegal activity is an exception and not the rule in Golden Valley. We admit our responsibility, but we have taken appropriate measures to correct the future behavior. Our community and city have been patient, but we believe it's time to reopen this deputy registrar's office. I believe there is an amendment that Senator Rests has, and once you see that, I believe that this more than strikes a balance between the needs of the department while holding the city accountable. In fact, I believe the amendment will change the legislation from a permanent reinstatement to a provisional reinstatement.
Mr. Chairman, it is the A1 amendment, and it also reflects the work on this bill that's been done in the House.
So, Mr. Chair, members, I do have the city manager, Tom Burt, here, as well as the assistant city manager, Chantel Canals, with me if there's any technical questions. But otherwise, I ask for your support on Senate File 2261.
Senator Rest offers the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? And Senator Rest, what does the amendment act do?
What it does was described by Mayor Harris. It puts into place some additional requirements for the city of Golden Valley going forward, and in particular requiring that it comply with best practices that may be set by the commissioner. Some of us wonder why there aren't best practices out there right now, but nevertheless, any that are set up. And also, if you'll see in line 1-6 of the amendment, that the city would be compelled to file a bond as a condition of beginning service again, and the and in paragraph D is further requirement or understanding, I guess I should say, that the commissioner can impose additional sanctions if they find that there is something inappropriate that continuing to go on, and that understanding would be there by the city as well as the commissioner, and also the ability to our further understanding, clarifying of other kinds of sanctions, including paying fines if the office is not run in good order.
And just for the record, we have a quorum.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A1 amendment as an office amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A1 amendment. Any questions from the committee? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, Mayor Harris and our city manager stand ready to answer any inquiries from the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Rest. Is McCormick in the audience? In the event that the committee has any questions for her? Ms. McCormick, maybe you should probably come up. I do have one question on the fiscal note. Senator DeCrack?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, I don't know if you're the one to answer this question or not, but was there some funds that disappeared in this in this case, and if so, have they been returned?
Senator Rust.
Senator Kreif, thank you for that question. There was a very complex and sophisticated fraud going on, and it was discovered, and the city has made the situation whole, as I understand.
I can call the city manager to give more detail to that question if you'd like, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
I am Tom Burt, the city manager for Golden Valley. Chair, members, the question was how much. It was approximately $11,000 that was stolen from the department. They did cash on the bond. The city has a bond in place through the League of Minnesota Cities. That was cashed out, and they were made whole.
Mr. Chairman, Senator DeKreif, one of the concerns that I've had is if this kind of behavior could go on here, that raises some concerns about similar sophisticated fraud perhaps being possible elsewhere. I think the city of Golden Valley is going an extra step to protect the clients and the state, and I believe they deserve a second chance at this point, even as the cases are moving forward and the some 1,600 pages of data are being examined by the department to do the trail of how it actually happened. There were certainly failures, and the city will admit to this, of internal controls. Just basic practices were not being followed. That won't happen again. And it seems to me that they are, a good case for the development of best practices moving forward to apply to other deputy registrars. The department, you'll hear, have some concerns, and it's my understanding they want to wait until everything is resolved before letting Golden Valley have that office open again, and I would suggest that is extreme, and that they are ready and responsible and can have that office opened shortly.
Senator Rest, I guess I'm a sponsor of this bill, or not a co-author of this bill. You know, in private business, when there are problems such as this, you don't shut down the entire store for years on end to resolve an issue like this. Certainly the store continues to operate while investigations are being done. And I guess maybe we could have...
And the city did report it immediately. Right. Both to police and over the weekend, to the police and also for a criminal complaint and also to DPS or transportation.
And I guess in my opinion, too, and one of the reasons why I signed on to the bill is we have customers to serve out there, and it's time to get the store back open, in my opinion. But Ms. McCormick, if you would talk a little bit about the first of all, I have a question on the fiscal note. Do you see any problem with the $36,000 coming out of the special revenue fund to fund, I believe it's the inventory? Is that correct? Yes, the inventory and stickers for this facility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and that's a standard cost for any new deputy registrar. That's the standard cost for the inventory, and then obviously we put the inventory out there, but then obviously we're recouping costs as the plates are sold, and so, but that is the cost that we have to absorb in order to for any new office. And in terms of the amendment that's been offered, I think the department can support the amendment because it allows for provisional appointment. We're moving forward with a hearing, and we'll be moving towards that resolution. So as long as the appointment is provisional, as is stated in the amendment to the bill, the department believes that we can move forward. And so we don't have any objections to that. I think in general we do believe that the city of Golden Valley has been very cooperative as we've been moving through these various stages. And certainly our goal would be that we would be able to, we have been working with deputies on proposed best practices, and we believe that we first of all need to move forward with the hearing, and then we would hope that any offices would be able to be implementing best practices as they're developed with this deputy task force that we're working with right now.
Good. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Senator DeGreff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, in your investigation that you conducted in Golden Valley, has that helped the department look at other deputy registrars to see if there's any other inappropriate activities going on?
Ms. McCorm?
Mr. Chair and Senator DeKreif, certainly there has, we have to, for one thing, I want to just mention the fact that Golden Valley did provide us with a very detailed internal audit that has been very helpful, but there are criminal investigations that are still going on. So that internal audit has been helpful. Obviously, we know that that is confidential, but at the same time, it certainly has brought forward issues that we're taking a look at, and we're using this task force that we're working with to look at all issues related to how we do business and what we can do to improve the internal controls as well as continue to provide good service to our customers.
Any other questions on the part of the committee? Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, if there are if there is no one else who wants to testify, I don't know of any other concerns from other interested parties at this point. And if there aren't any, then I would move that Senate File 2261 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Finance Committee or laid over, whatever your pleasure is, if you're going to have an additional transportation policy finance bill.
Senator Rest, this is a revenue and inventory that is coming out of the special revenue fund. I don't think that extra step of probably sending it to the Finance Committee. We are a Finance Committee in charge of that special revenue fund, and I think that we can make that decision to send it to the Senate floor if you'd like to
certainly
have it move there.
Mr. Chairman, okay. Then I change my motion, and I would move that Senate File 2261 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
Senator Rest has moved that Senate File 2261 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion?
As amended.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. As amended, be sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We're going to jump around here a little bit on the schedule as we wait for testifiers. Senator DeGreif, you ready to present Senate File 2426? Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Senate File 2426 is a is a bill that was actually brought to me, and it's the Minnesota State Fair was actually looking for some help. Many of the amusement ride operators at the fair transport their rides around the fair on twin trailers. And these rides have been transported on twin trailers for a number of years. Current law allows commodities to be transported on twin trailers, but the state patrol recently informed the fair that an amusement ride were beyond the definition of commodities and thus not authorized to be transported on twin trailers. The state patrol suggested the fair seek this change and add the words property or equipment to the definition. This change has the support of the state patrol, and MnDOT drafted the language suggested. There are no known opponents. And I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator DeGreif. Ms. Pesek?
Thank you. Sarah Pesek, representing the Minnesota State Fair. And I don't have a whole lot to add other than what Senator DeGreif said. It's just a change that we need to make into the definition of a twin trailer that will allow amusement rides to be transported to the fairgrounds under this proposed law change. And I know MnDOT and the State Patrol are here if there's any questions, but that's it.
All right. Thank you, and we will open it up to the State Patrol or MnDOT if they would like to come and testify on this bill. Time's up. Just kidding. I'll give you a little more time than that. But other than that, Senator DeGreif, motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we pass Senate File 2426, and what would be your pleasure to go to an omnibus bill or?
At this point, I think we'll send it directly to the Senate floor if that's what you would like to do with it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That would be my motion.
Senator DeGreif moves that Senate File 2426 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator DeGreif, welcome back.
Would you like me to stay?
With Senate File 1636.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, an A1 amendment, that I would like to move to get this bill in order.
We'll pass out that amendment. We'll give members a minute to take a look at it. Senator DeGreif, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, the amendment essentially, and Ms. Brasovsky might help me with this, but I think just essentially puts the money where it has been in the past. So it's just defining where the money, the tax dollars go to.
Ms. Brasovsky? Ms. Boyd, yes, our fiscal analyst. Sorry, Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, this just amends a later section in 297A dealing with the distribution of revenues from motor vehicle leases, and it makes clear that the revenue will still be captured from these rent-to-own and lease-to-own vehicles and deposited, as under current law, in the county state aid and Greater Minnesota Transit accounts.
Ms. Boyd, it looks, maybe you want to give us a bit of an overview on this. It looks as, am I reading this correctly, that there is a bit of a reduction in those funds? Maybe you could just kind of give us an overview of what revenue says here.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the slight reduction to these funds is due to the fact that these are rent-to-own and lease-to-own vehicles that can be returned at any time. If you pay the tax up front, as under current law, it is a lump sum, whereas if you pay it with your periodic payment and down payments, these might not equal the same amounts because these vehicles may be returned before the end of what their normal lease period would have been.
It looks as though it's a modest amount. Any questions on from the committee on the amendment? Senator DeCryf moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. To the bill, Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We currently have a Minnesota-based business that can conduct business in 46 other states, except because of the tax law in Minnesota, cannot operate here. Current law states for new and used vehicle leases, excluding vehicles with manufacturer's gross vehicle rate greater than 10,000 pounds, the sales tax of 6.875% is required to be paid up front on the total lease price. Prior to 2005, the tax was paid on each monthly payment. Many of the customers of Northland, that's the company, around the country, are low to middle income and don't have very good credit rating. Many of them will purchase a low-priced used vehicle, and this law change will allow them to own a better quality automobile. When the purchaser goes to the deputy register to purchase a license to register the car, they are required to pay sales tax. There's no proof necessary to show what was actually paid for the vehicle, and I've known people who have reported a sale of much less than the actual purchase price. In this case, the state does not receive the proper sales tax we have coming on that sale. Another symptom of many of these folks purchasing inexpensive cars is some of them drive without insurance. The proposed law change would provide an exemption to the upfront payment of the sales tax for rent-to-own and lease-to-own used vehicles, where the lessee may purchase or return the vehicle at any time for any reason without penalty. The sales tax would be imposed on the down payment on each periodic lease payment. This company also requires their customers to carry liability and physical damage on their car, which is monitored closely. This is a great benefit to Minnesota to have more people insured on our roadways. This law change will allow this lower to middle class group to lease a car and walk away from it if their life conditions change, either for the better or the worse. This law change will also allow a successful Minnesota-based company to do business in their home state. What a novel idea.
Very nice. Mr. Blowers?
Yes, my name is Dan Blowers. I'm Senior Vice President of Northland Rent-Own Lease-Own. I'm here just representing this bill because the current situation that we have just doesn't work. We have a lot of people out there prolonged buying cars. The longer the wait, the more decrepit they get. We've had safety issues. We've had all kinds of things. And 70% of the people just can simply not come up with the credit to buy a new car or a new used car. And so the answer would normally be to lease a car. But in our environment in Minnesota, we can't do that. The burden is too heavy on the front for the car dealer to make any money and exist in leasing used cars. This delay of the taxes and collecting it monthly will let the car dealer operate. It will let the customer get in a much better car than they would be able to buy out on the street. The net result in the end is you'll collect taxes monthly that are considerably more than they would pay in the fee at the DMV on the cars they can afford to buy now. And the net result is everybody wins. And so we'd like to see this change made.
Mr. Blowers, do car dealers typically submit sales tax revenues and statements on a monthly basis anyhow, or what would be the mechanism really here that would make this work?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they do pay taxes every month anyway. It's just a matter of how much they pay. If I could give you a, for instance, for an example, guy coming in leasing a car today in Minnesota who doesn't have a lot of money, say he's got under $2,000 and he needs to lease a car. It's simply not possible. $800 or $900 of that $2,000 is going to go to sales tax right up front. And in fact, he may not have the car for 4 or 5 months and have to return it. It just makes that situation not work. If he were to pay that tax monthly, he would pay about $2,250 a month for 36 months, and it would come in regularly month after month. Okay. The difference is sizable. If we looked at the actual figures from a state that does it the way we're proposing, like Louisiana collected $4.5 million last year in sales tax on leased-owned vehicles. We collected maybe around 100,000. Just that many more people can get decent cars and get on the road.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me in the bill here, or point out to me where the, you know, if they're going to buy the insurance on a monthly basis, and, you know, my thought process here is it's probably going to be included as maybe a service that the leasing agent is going to provide. But I want to make sure that if someone chooses not to buy insurance from the leasing agent, that we're real clear that they can buy it from a third party. And I'm wondering where you can direct me in this bill, or where I can be directed that is exactly the case.
Mr. Yes. Lowers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howe, yes, that's part of the program that's done with the dealer. Because the dealer owns the car and he's the titled owner, he can't afford to have somebody driving a car around with no insurance on it. Okay. So all of the underlying primary insurance, which is required by the lease, is monitored, and I mean very, very closely. Notices on any policy change 10 days in advance. The dealer is notified. By the time that the insurance cancels, he's already made the decision to pick the car up and take it away from the customer, or at least disable it until insurance is back on it. You're not going to let somebody drive your car with no insurance on it, and they won't either.
Senator Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there isn't a provision, there isn't a provision where they can get their own insurance? I mean, that's not an option, or is it an option that they can go and buy their own insurance for a year? I guess that's the question I have. I understand in here that we're taking care of that yes. You know, that they're going to have insurance when they hit the road.
Yeah.
My question is more geared towards the choices that someone may have, you know, like when you're renting a car, mm-hmm. to either opt out of the collision if you're going to put a personal credit card up, or some sort of a, you know, some sort of a financing deal. But that's what I'm talking about.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you. Senator Howe, good question. I'm sorry I missed that part of it. The leasing program itself requires that the underlying customer has to furnish insurance acceptable to the car dealer. Okay. But he gets to choose where he buys it, from whom he buys it, as long as it's acceptable to the car dealer. And we have laws that make sure that happens.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator DeGreff. Let me offer up anybody in the audience with the wishes to speak for or against this provision. Ms. Bell? Right. Senator DeGreff.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we pass Senate File 1636 as amended and send it to the Senate floor.
Ben advised Senator DeGreif that this, because of your amendment to the bill and the revenue statement, that it'll probably have to be returned to taxes, or should be returned to taxes.
Okay.
So Senator DeGreif moves that Senate File 1636, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. For our next bill, we'll step back to Senator Roebling, Senate File 929.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
We have a bill that is somewhat similar to Senator Rust's bill that you heard earlier, except we are not trying to reestablish. We are trying to open a branch office of the Deputy Registrar's Office for Scott County. The plan is that we are building a new library in the Elko New Market area, and within that facility, they want to have a space for a deputy registrar's office. And it's rather a unique plan. We're trying to be very efficient down there in Scott County, And we're planning to cross-train the library staff to also be able to work as deputy registrar staff. And we've been doing a lot of this in Scott County. We have a central customer service desk in our main courthouse at present, and people can come there for everything, so they don't have to go all over the courthouse from one office to another. They have a really big window with a number of cross-trained people there, and it's been working very well, and so they feel that they can try this in another location. And so that is the proposal, is that we'd like authority to have that satellite office over there. Right now, Shakopee is the county seat. It's located in the very northern part of Scott County, and Elko New Market is in the very southern part of Scott County, and so that's why they're looking for another site within the county. There's a private deputy registrar that is located in Prior Lake. I think it's about 16 miles from this proposed site, 15 or 16 miles, it's right on the Prior Lake Savage border, so they're kind of in the eastern quadrant of the county. I do have an amendment that we'd like to have offered, and it's the A-12 amendment, if someone might want to offer that. As I was looking at this, I think we might have to make one other little change, and maybe we can incorporate it with this amendment. On line 1.9 of the bill, after it says an existing deputy registrar office, it probably, and maybe Senate Council can help me, I think we're doing this right, should have a comma and then hours of operation. And then it would be the rest of the amendment as proposed.
Ms. Berzovsky?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that works fine on line 1.9 to insert comma hours of operation after the word office.
Okay. Senator Perry moves the A-12 amendment. Is that correct, Ms. Berzovsky? Is that the way I read that? How should we refer to this
Mr.
amendment?
Chair, this is a reviser document, and the reviser always puts the year at the beginning of its documents. So what A-12 means in a reviser document is Amendment 2012. So you can refer to it that way, and that's understood. But the 684 is the actual document number in this case.
Senator Perry offers the 684 amendment. With the amendment, Senator Roebling. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. To the bill.
And, Mr. Chair, what that does is just allows those the deputy registrar's hours to be the same, of course, as the library hours. And I have with me today Cindy Geis from Scott County, and she would like to talk a little bit about the plans for this facility.
Ms. Geis, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come down here and testify on behalf of this bill. I currently manage...
Ms. Geis, could you identify yourself for the record?
I apologize. Cindy Geis, Scott County. I am the manager of seven different departments that deal with customer service and land use, title, and taxation in Scott County. I am one of my departments, the customer service office, is the area that we're looking to expand. Currently within that office, like Claire had stated before, we do multiple services there, and Elko New Market is a very underserved part of our county to date. It's a pretty small community to date, but it's along the 35W corridor, and our expectation is that's going to grow as the economy turns around and development starts again. Our current library hours down in the Elko New Market are going to be Monday from 1 to 8, Wednesday from 1 to 8, and Friday from 10 to 5. So it does provide a lot of opportunity for our people who work during the day hours to have the flexibility of going to the Elko New Market Library to get this additional service. The other services that we're looking to expand out in that area would include they could pay their real estate taxes, get marriage certificates, birth certificates, drop off documents for recording so that their title or liens can be established within the county, pick up radon kits or water kits. Passports would be offered variably throughout the year. But those are just some of the smaller areas that we're looking to expand within that area. This is one service that we have heard through our community that is lacking within that southeastern quadrant. Again, it's highly rural, and it will allow our people down in that area of our community to be able to get their driver's licenses, pick up their tabs, and do whatever other motor vehicle or driver's license processes that they'd like within our county. So I really appreciate the opportunity to come down here in support of this, and I would appreciate the support of the committee.
Ms. Geis, who's going to provide the training for our librarians to perform these transactions? Is that going to be an expense for the city itself?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it will not be an added expense because we are currently shadowing each other. So the library staff are within our current customer service facility, and our customer service group is also spending some time within our library system. So our library people can help us process some of these other services that we want to do, as well as if we aren't having any action down there for these services, our people can help out with library needs as they exist. So there will not be any additional expenses because we're using our current staff and we're just changing our hours a little bit at our government center to accommodate.
Sounds like a very good idea. Any questions from the committee? Ms. McCormick, we will call on you once again if you have any input either for or against this or any questions for. She's always reluctant to come.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Roebling.
We're lucky that the county also staffs the libraries, and so it's kind of an easy transition. I imagine if it were a city staffed facility, it would be a little more difficult, but this does make it much easier.
Ms. McCormick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And the department isn't taking a position on this bill. We would certainly work with Scott County to ensure that we have the proper inventory and the training for the staff involved.
I see the fiscal note reflects that $36,000 worth of inventory, which you will recoup over a period of time. So I guess members, this is a part of our purview to approve this and move the bill forward. But any questions from the committee? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Is somebody making a motion?
I'll move it.
Senator Howell moves that Senate File 929 be as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Next up is Senator Howe's Senate File 2394. Senator Hall.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like the short version or the long version?
Always want to have the best possible information in as quickly and concisely as you can provide it to us.
Fabulous. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. The Senate File 2394 is amending the brake requirements for towed implements of husbandry. The change of the section of law that governs traffic regulations applies to implements of husbandry. This statute would modify the brake requirements of towed implements. Currently, the way the current statute is written, if an implement of husbandry is over 12,000 pounds and is not equipped with brakes, it can only be towed on the road by a self-propelled implement of husbandry. In other words, it needs to be a farm tractor. Dealers and even many farmers have semi-tractors today that have as much braking capacity as farm tractors and can tow implements in this weight category just as safely. The statute goes on to say that an implement of husbandry is over 24,000 pounds and is not equipped with brakes, it cannot be towed on the road at all, regardless of what is towing it, even if it is a farm tractor that would be pulling it to the field. So this would correct that. I don't believe there's any opposition. We might want to have someone from DPS testify to it.
Any questions? Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Howe, I was curious. It says unless the implement of husbandry is in a combination of vehicles that meets the requirements of 169.67 sub 5, and we don't have that in front of us. What is that?
Ms. Berzofsky?
What is that reference?
I have Senate counsel to allow.
Mr. Chairman, Gene Halverson from MnDOT. I can answer that question, Senator Lori. In 1991, I was a major in the State Patrol, and then Public Safety Commissioner Ralph Church asked me to put together a work group of all the farm groups to look at implements of husbandry. And what you see before you now, the 24,000, 12,000, 3,000 was language that came out of that. And it's always been a confusion ever since. And what sub 5 of 169.67 says is it's the standard performance standards for all vehicles. And basically what it says is that at a speed of 20 miles an hour, from a speed of 20 miles an hour, you have to be able to stop the vehicle or combination of vehicle within 50 feet. That's all that says. So this is saying if the towing vehicle, be that a truck tractor or a farm tractor, is towing an implement of husbandry and you can stop it from 20 miles an hour in 50 feet, you're not required to have brakes on the towed implement. And it should be pointed out, too, that in that same section, 169.801, implements of husbandry are limited to 30-mile-an-hour speed limit.
So. Okay.
Senator Lori?
That was going to be my question, is what was the – I'm actually recalling a pretty hairy incident I was in towing an implement of husbandry, and it got pretty squirrely. It started pushing me down a hill, and made me pretty nervous. And just wanted to understand what the laws were. I probably was going at a speed greater than 30 and shouldn't have been and lived. But
Are you on the track?
Huh? No, I was on Highway 23 on the River Hills there. And
is there any opposition from the department? No. Anybody from DPS like to make some comments? You have questions for DPS? Okay. Sounds like you've got it pretty well covered, Senator Howe, very concisely and quickly.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, sounds like we'll be more safe and not less safe if this bill passes. That's all I really need to know.
Thank you. If that's the case. All right. Does he have a copy of this?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Howe.
I think I would move that Senate file 2394 be referred to the Senate floor and recommended to pass.
Senator Hall moves that Senate file 2394 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Next up is Senate file 2286, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Senator Cruz.
Today we have before us Senate File 2286. It's actually a department bill, mostly technical, but I'll give you a quick rundown here and then hand it over to Tom Serenke, who can describe it much more articulately than I can. Essentially, what this legislation does is it recognizes bridge inspection statutes to ensure that they are aligned with national bridge inspection standards as defined in the Code of Federal Regulations 650 Subpart C. It clarifies responsibility and authority for statewide bridge inspection program managers and administrators. It eliminates duplications, conflicting provisions, and obsolete language in Minnesota statute and Minnesota rules. It updates the law to recognize current department bridge inspection policies, which were modified after the collapse of the I-35W bridge. And then lastly, it moves some bridge inspection provisions currently in Minnesota rulemaking into statutes. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tom Strabicki. I'm the State Bridge Construction and Maintenance Engineer with the MnDOT Bridge Office. In that role, I also serve as a National Bridge Inspection Program Manager for the state, and that's for all public roadway bridges in the state, both state and local agency. And Senator Cruz, I think, covered it fairly clearly. This is a technical rewrite of Minnesota law, particularly the statutes and the administrative rules that have been assembled over the years and the decades to address bridge safety inspections in Minnesota. And we looked at them recently and said they've really reached a point now where we need to go through and kind of clean them up. As the senator mentioned, eliminate duplicate provisions and assure that they're aligning with the federal code and the national bridge inspection standards. So I think the one thing that I just want to emphasize is that in doing that, we looked at the administrative rules and thought it made sense to bring all those non-duplicate provisions out of the rules and bring them into statute and have one source of Minnesota law with regard to bridge inspections. And that's the proposed legislation you see in front of you there, is the statute 165.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Dibble?
Sounds like we'll be more safe than not.
Sounds like that's the case, Senator Dibble. Thank you. Yeah.
That's our intent.
And I'm happy.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, perhaps the testifier could address the repeals in rules. Just give us a brief overview of what is included and what we are repealing from the current statute so that we know a little bit more about what is happening in those areas.
Mr. Strabisky.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the repeals in the rules were all provisions that were either moved from rules into statute or provisions that were duplicates of what were already in statute or already in the National Bridge Inspection Standards. So it wasn't our intent to eliminate any requirements on the inspection program. It was a attempt to bring them into, again, one source of Minnesota law with regard to inspections. And I just add, we have a fully annotated and marked up set of rules that are commented down the right sidebar on provision by provision, whether it was ported into statute, whether it was a duplicate provision, or whether it was a repeat of what was already in the National Bridge Inspection Standards. So that would be available for analysis if anyone would want to go to that level of review.
Okay, Senator Lowe. Any other questions? Senator Cruz.
Well, I guess what would be the chair's pleasure of where to send this? I don't see it going to any other committees.
There is no fiscal note. I think at this point we will, if it's your wish, we can send it to the Senate floor.
That would be my desire, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz moves that Senate File 2286 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. There being no further business before the committee, our next hearing will be March 22nd, 2012. We stand adjourned.